It is Friday morning, and that makes me your host, Jonathan Zaroff. Well, we do have a show for you, though. We will start off the show talking about the MG&E rate hikes that just passed. This story has been going on for a while, but they've passed it just before Christmas, these rate hikes that basically increase rates and put the increases into the fixed part of the scheme, instead of into the actual kilowatt hours used, and therefore this is going to be what you might call regressive, in that it will cost more money, higher bills for those who are energy efficient, and lower bills for those who are using lots and lots of energy. So we will talk to Mitch Bray about that. He's with Repower Madison. And they have a petition they'd like you to sign. So we'll find out about what can be done next, since this plan did just pass after much debate, at least much grumbling in the community about it. All right. And we may have another guest. Let me check my email here and see whether he's come in. Let's see. Yes. Oh, this will be a good one. Just in seconds ago. We will talk with Jabril Farage. He's got an interesting story, a journalist out of Milwaukee who, I think I have to say he was harassed by police trying to report on a story about a protest, was arrested, and tried to scare him a bit, it seems, and we'll hear his story from his lips. That'll be Jabril Farage out of Milwaukee. All right. That's a lot. We better get to the show. himself, Digging Holes. Joining us now is Mitch Bry, or Bray. He's just rolled in. We didn't even know he's in the studio. We're trying to call him on the phone. He's sitting in the lobby. He's with Repower. Repower Madison is comprised of citizens whose immediate goal is to persuade MG&E to drop their proposed billing scheme, which is now actually, very recently, the billing scheme.
That's correct.
And that's what we're here to get updated on, is this went through and how it went through and what might happen next, this rate plan. But let's back up for a minute and talk about exactly what this rate plan does that went through on December 23rd.
Right. MG&E's billing scheme is increasing the customer charge for all customers, electric and natural gas. It's going up by about 80%. From $10 a month to $19 a month for electric, pretty similar for natural gas. And then the usage charge goes down slightly so that the people who are using the most amount of electricity may actually see their bill go down, while low energy users are going to see an increase in their monthly bill.
And there's also another little piece of this where people who have installed solar and are actually selling energy back to the MG&E, giving it back to the grid, they're going to get less money for that power than they used to get.
Because of the way the rates are changing per kilowatt hour, new people who install solar, it's going to take them longer to get their money back. That payback period will take longer.
So let's talk a little bit first about process here. You've been involved in pushing back against this and trying to prevent this from going through. And I know part of the proposal came out just before Thanksgiving, and then the actual vote and approval came out on December 23rd. So it seems like these are pretty dead news times. It seems like they're maybe sliding this in under the radar.
Well, the MG&E's original proposal did come out way back in April, but there wasn't much detail on it. And once some details came out, there was quite a flurry of activity because the people who did know about it were really outraged. MG&E initially wanted to raise their fixed charge per month up to $69 a month for electricity in 2017. After the outrage, they pulled some of that back. So what's happened recently is the Public Service Commission has taken up the issue. They're the regulators that oversee the utility industry. And they approved it finally 2 days before Christmas, and their initial vote on it was the day before Thanksgiving. So like you said, they're just trying to, you know, prevent public outrage because they're hoping that no one would hear about it.
So let's take this. First, let's look at the assumption, you know, do they need to raise rates in some way? Do they need to bring in more revenue? Would you argue with that?
You know, they do almost every year. They raise rates. People don't like it, but it's not that big a deal.
So let's move on to the big issue then, is how they've done that. So we talked about the fixed rates are going up, the kilowatt hour usage charges are going down. If you're trying to, you know, there's going to be a system that's either going to encourage people to conserve energy or not, or encourage them to simply, you know, use it as they please. This one seems to tilt the playing field towards, hey, you know, use as much energy as you want. It's not going to make that big a difference. You're going to always be paying this basic fixed rate that's going up, and we're actually going to lower. It seems like they're disincentivizing energy efficiency. Why would they do that?
You know, they give different reasons on this, depending when you ask. Often the reason they need more revenue, they've initially said, was because of their coal plant, because they were putting some upgrades into Elm Road Generating Station in Milwaukee. But now they're saying it's because of solar and because people are more energy efficient. And it doesn't quite match up, because we should try to be more energy efficient. And these new rates are a disincentive. These new rates are essentially an incentive to use more energy.
So they're saying that what's driving the fact that they want to raise the fixed rate and lower the kilowatt charge is because if they lower it, then they'll pay less money to people using solar. That seems like it can't be that much solar that's breaking the bank here and driving this whole deal. Is that true?
Well, there are only about 200 customers of MG&E that have solar, so it's a really minuscule percentage. They're worried about the future. They're worried about solar growing because it has shown tremendous growth and tremendous potential. And they see it as competition, so they want to, you know, squash that while they can.
But I remember getting lots of things in my bill, like little, you call them buck slips, and they'd say, buy wind power. You'll pay a little bit more, but you'll be sponsoring a good, clean form of energy. And would you like to pay this much each month towards getting this kind of energy? So I guess if they were going to have a similar approach now, they would say, would you like to buy back solar from your neighbors at a higher rate? It's a great thing for our community and for the environment, right? But they didn't take that tack.
That's called greenwashing. They're putting out an image that they're green. And, you know, that's what we want. We do want a green utility. But this billing scheme is going in the opposite direction. While they're locking everyone into this higher fixed fee, it's really a disincentive for clean energy.
So there's some public opinion that would push them to want to be a little greener and encourage energy conservation. But is there anything that truly ties them in any meaningful way to hitting energy goals about reducing dependency on coal, about actually becoming more self-sufficient and moving away from oil and coal?
There are a couple I can mention here. The state does have a requirement for 10% clean energy, and MG&E has reached that. So that is good. That's the renewable energy portfolio standard. So we're happy about that. It's a good policy statewide. As far as moving MG&E itself, they have pledged to have dialogue with the community in the upcoming year before they propose their next rate restructuring. And they are planning to, gather input and feedback from the community to guide their future billing practices. We think that's really important, and Repower Madison has a petition that we're gathering signatures for on our website asking MG&E to have an independent moderator in this discussion so that we can have a real dialogue, and also, to make sure to include all stakeholders. And we're also asking MG&E to adopt a plan that will achieve 25% renewable energy for the city of Madison by 2025.
I'm still stuck on the paying back solar users for their power being the sticking point here. It just doesn't make sense to me. So couldn't they have a system where they say, okay, we need more revenue. Everybody agrees we need more revenue. We got to get it either from the basic rate or from the usage charges. Let's get it from the usage charges so that we incentivize everybody to be energy efficient, but we can only pay solar people, for when they give energy back to the grid, we can only pay them at the market rate. Because that's what they're saying, that the market rate for energy is actually lower than what they're needing to pay the solar users. Why can't they detach those issues?
The solar issue is really, it's almost a red herring. But right now they are paying solar users back at market rate until they achieve, if the solar user generates more electricity than they use, then all of a sudden they only get paid back about 3 or 4 cents a kilowatt hour. But up until they match their usage, it kind of just cancels out one for one.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it's not really the over, giving back to the grid. It's all the energy they're using that they're being so efficient and good at that MG&E isn't able to make enough money off of it.
Yeah, and I don't know the statistics, but I think most solar users, solar generators, produce less solar than they consume. So really they're, providing some energy to the grid, and that energy is going to their neighbors when they're not at home, and they get credit for that. There are miniature power plants.
All right. So let's talk about what you'd like to see happen next. So this was a fight that basically has been lost in some sense, except that you're still fighting there. You've got a petition out there. So you're basically looking at round two now, that next year there's going to be the same discussion again, and you'd like that to be a more open discussion?
People are really engaged. Clean energy is really important for our future. And just because the Public Service Commission gave MG&E everything they want, we're not going to back down. We're going to talk to MG&E. We're going to make sure that they listen to us. They haven't been listening so far. If they were listening, they would have pulled back. 90% of commenters were against this proposal. So that is why we have the petition, to make sure that they listen. We think that we need an independent moderator, because we can't rely on MG&E alone to run this conversation. If it's just MG&E, it's going to be a soapbox for them to do more greenwashing and to, market that they're our local utility.
What would you tell somebody that's got maybe a major business and is looking at their energy needs for the coming decade, because here we've got some fluctuations this year, maybe next year. We don't know what's going to happen. And they're looking at putting in solar or geothermal, wind. What would you say to them? Because really, they're going to have to do some math and some financial projections, right? And it'd be very hard to know whether it would be worthwhile to do or not.
You know, these systems are still good investments, but over time, MGE is looking to reduce the rate of return on them, and that's unfair. So I would, you know, recommend that businesses and individuals talk to a local company and see what their costs are going to be and what their payback period is going to be. It's good for the future. It's good for the community if we do move towards clean energy. Wisconsin has no coal in our land. We have no natural gas. Our only domestic source of energy is clean energy in Wisconsin. So if we embrace that, it's going to be good for the state.
Yes, I was reading the piece, which was not about how, I'm sorry, I don't have it right in front of me, but the woman who was saying that she doesn't really understand why Wisconsin is so into coal, since we don't have any coal in the state, and basically the coal trucks come in and they leave coal, and they leave with a bunch of money from the ratepayers of Wisconsin and leave the state.
Yeah, I recall reading that as well, though I'm not certain where it was. But that reminds me of a quote I heard from Commissioner Ellen Nowak from the Public Service Commission. She's been known to call Wisconsin a coal state. Again, we have no coal. We consume a lot of it. So in her mind, that means we're a coal state. Just, you know, the logic doesn't add up.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, how can people get involved, sign the petition? I guess that's the first thing, is to find that petition, sign it if you're concerned about this issue, and then attend whatever kinds of talks and forums are set for this.
Sure. So the petition is on repowermadison.org. It's pretty much right at the top. Again, it's repowermadison.org. We're also asking that people do attend these meetings with MGE whenever they're announced. MGE hasn't given us any detail on that, except that they're going to take more than 12 months or longer, and they'll be announced sometime in the future. The other thing that I would recommend to anyone who's interested is to buy a share or two of MGE. You know, there are some there's a shareholder meeting coming up in May for MGE. It's their annual shareholder meeting, and there are some resolutions that are going to be voted on at that meeting. So, you know, if you're able to buy just a couple shares, you can show up, you can have a vote, and I'd encourage everyone to do that.
All right. Okay, some good stuff. Sign the petition, buy some stock, go to some meetings. Mitch Bray from Repower Madison, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
All right, we've got one announcement for you here. The 30th Annual Madison and Dane County King Holiday Observance, the Movement of the 60s, a Legacy for Today. That is this coming Monday, January 19th, at the Overture Center in the Capitol Theater. That's where they always have it. And beneath my voice is DJ Kix, A2 Nick Holder, Sometimes I'm Blue. Is that right? Did I get all the things together right? I did, Anker says. All right. A little more on that event on Monday, the King Celebration. Freedom Songs at 5. The program is at 6. And Diane Nash is the keynote speaker. She's a pioneer of the American Civil Rights Movement. In 1960, she was chairperson of the Student Sit-In Movement in Nashville, Tennessee, the first southern city to desegregate its lunch counters. She helped found the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, and coordinated the Freedom Ride from Birmingham to Jackson. Diane was appointed by President Kennedy to the committee that helped pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and has continued to lead a life of peace and civil rights activism. All right, you can also join the MLK Community Choir, directed by Leotha Stanley. The choir is performing at the City County King Holiday Observance on January 19th, same day, Monday, and participation is open to all. They're also performing on Tuesday, January 13th at 7 p.m. and Saturday the 17th at 11 a.m. at Mount Zion Baptist Church. All right, let's see. On the 28th, there's an annual free community dinner. They fit a lot on this flyer. No, that is on the 16th. Friday, January 16th is the 28th annual free community dinner. And the Youth Day of Service is on Monday, the 19th. A lot going on. You know what? You better check it out on Facebook at King Coalition. But the big things are happening at Overture in the Capitol Theater on Monday, 5 and 6 p.m. We've got a couple announcements to play for you now, I believe, and we'll be back momentarily with Jabril Farage talking about what he wrote up here on the Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service entitled, Why I Was Arrested in Milwaukee's Central City. Jabril Farage joins us on the phone. He writes for Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. And he posted something there recently. I'll let him talk about some of the issues that he's covered before this, but the article that caught my attention was Why I Was Arrested in Milwaukee's Central City. Arrested basically while being a journalist and asking a few questions of the police. And we'll get quickly to it, and I'll let Jabril tell his own story. Good morning.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. First, maybe tell us a little bit about what kind of issues you've been covering and why. I know you were looking to cover issues that you felt weren't getting the coverage in the mainstream media. And maybe what you were writing about right before this happened.
Yeah, for your listeners who might not be, who might not know me or know what I've been doing. As you kind of said, but I'll go into a little bit more depth. I've been traveling Milwaukee's neighborhoods for the last several months, meeting people, sharing their personal stories via MilwaukeeStories.org. Over that time, I've also reported on a select number of news events, including coverage of a dispute over student government and free speech at UWM, an event in subsequent March, supporting Dontre Hamilton and his family, a press conference opposing the proposed I-94 expansion, and the recent announcement that the officer who shot Mr. Hamilton wouldn't be charged. As I kind of say in my account, and I would encourage anyone who hasn't read it to go out and do so. As you said, it was published on the Neighborhood News Service site, along with onmilwaukee.com and urbanmilwaukee.com in Milwaukee. It's been my goal to talk and to listen to some of the people in Milwaukee who haven't really been asked what they think, you know, to cover events in the city that our media is not and has not been covering. So, as I say in my account, when I received a call from my father last Friday, December 26th, he told me that he had driven through a large crowd of protesters near 27th and Burleigh in Milwaukee Central City, and he kind of started the call out with, you know, what I think is a joke, and he essentially told me there was no media present. He had called me a little bit late that day. It was about an hour after everything had went down. So the next time around, I really felt a responsibility to be there in the area the next time something was happening, because as I kind of mentioned, you know, I think it's one of the functions of the media that in situations such as this, they serve to keep protesters and police accountable and honest.
So you went out the next time that there was word that there would be a protest happening?
Mm-hmm. I did. I saw something, a post on Facebook saying that there would be some kind of action going on down there. It turned out to be a community meeting on December 27th, so that's last Saturday, and that this would be happening at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I saw that this was happening kind of right away, just dropped what I was doing, grabbed my camera and recorder, got in my car. I got down to the corner of 27th and Burleigh around 3:15, and there were three other people already waiting there, one black male, one black girl, one white male, and the white male identified himself as Christopher. We were all kind of just waiting there, seeing what was going to happen. None of us were exactly sure what was going to happen. And I did mention in my account that, And I was wearing a blue jacket and a bright orange winter hat, so pretty noticeable. Like I said, we were kind of unsure of what was happening, but while we were waiting there, the girl mentioned that there wouldn't be any marching, that there wouldn't be any kind of movement that day for sure. And while we're all sitting there talking, Christopher also mentioned that he'd come from the west part of the city, and that on his way down, he'd observed a large number. He said about 10 police squad cars and a bus parked around 35th and Burleigh, not far away. To this, I was, you know, it at least caused me to slightly question what was going on. In my experience, you know, I've seen when police have buses available, it indicates either an intent or a possibility that they are either planning to or might arrest a large amount of people. And this was my suspicion should any activity occur that day. I wasn't aware at the time of the actual circumstances, and I'll be glad to talk about that after I finish the account. But a couple minutes later, another black man who identified himself as Corey got out of a car. He came up to us, also confirmed nothing would be happening that day. And right after that, he and two other people who'd also got out of their car left. And the four of us are still in the corner. Still kind of not exactly sure what was going on. And we decided to kind of just go our separate ways. I wanted to get back home. So before doing that, I handed the three of them a card, considering the events the day before, kind of asked them to keep me appraised of any situations in the future. Around 3:25, I headed back to my car, been parked on 26th Street, just north of Burleigh. I put my camera and recorder in the back seat, started the car, and I started to drive north on 26th Street toward our avenue. It had kind of been in my mind to go up to 35th and Burleigh, you know, where I'd been told this large police presence had assembled, and really appraised the situation myself. But as I reached the corner of 26th and Hour, less than a block after I started my car and started moving, I noticed an unmarked squad car sitting to my right on the east side of 26th Street right before the intersection. And as I then turned left, I immediately spotted a marked squad car sitting on the south side of Hour, just about 30 feet west of the 27th Street intersection. So seeing an unmarked and marked car in such close proximity to this corner, I was a bit skeptical about the police intentions in the area. And as I approached 27th Street, I stopped, I looked left, looked right, crossed the street. And as I approached this marked squad car, I was going to simply continue on, keep going towards 35th. But in kind of a split second, last minute thought, I decided to ask these officers what was going on. And I'd driven about 5 feet past the driver's side window at that point. I stopped my car and I reversed slightly until our windows were aligned with each other. Now, keep in mind, I'm on the opposite side of the street as the officers, so we're not right next to each other. I rolled down my window, as did the officer. This officer would later be identified as Franco Stoy. I then proceeded to ask. I said, "Hey, why are you guys over here?" To that, he ordered me to move along, essentially disregarding the inquiry. And then a lot of stuff happened very quickly. I kind of, in the wake of that statement, just started to say I was just wondering, started to attempt to move my car which was still in reverse. And when I did not move along immediately because my car was still in reverse, Officer Stoy quickly exited the vehicle as I was attempting to shift into drive and open my driver's side door. He then commanded me to put the car in park, which I did, and Officer Stoy immediately pulled me from the vehicle and handcuffed me. I was quickly searched. They found no weapons or anything else illegal on me or in the car. And at this point, I was honestly surprised. I told the officers I wasn't aware that I could be handcuffed for asking questions. And as this was happening, Officer Stoy transferred me, while I was still handcuffed, to his partner, Officer Joseph Anderer. They began to search my vehicle, to which I said they were conducting an unlawful search. And within about 45 seconds of me being pulled from a car, at least four other police vehicles were also present on the block. Two marked cars. One was blocking the intersection of Hour and 28th, and one was on the corner of 27th and Hour. The unmarked car I noticed on 26th and Hour also pulled up, and there was an SUV as well, maybe a Suburban or other type of large vehicle. When all of these officers approached, I instantly kind of approached the first couple that came up and quickly told them, officer, I just asked them a question. They pulled me out of the car and handcuffed me, thinking that maybe another set of eyes on the situation would do something, but both of those officers kind of completely disregarded what I had said to them, responded quickly with okay or something of the sort and kept walking. So as we move on from there, I'm still standing there with Officer Ander, and I asked why I was being arrested, to which he replied, you are a domestic terrorist. I was obviously surprised by this. But, you know, in the initial aftermath, I clearly recall a few things. I was accused of, quote-unquote, stalking police, a charge which would be repeated multiple times. And I was also asked multiple times if I was trying to or was conspiring to kill a police officer. I also heard an officer ask while we're standing there still, right after I was pulled from the car and handcuffed, quote, is he one of the three we're looking for? To which I heard a voice reply, yes, but I believe there was a bit of confusion, and I can clarify some of those statements afterwards as well, I believe. also, in the course of the interaction, an officer who I'm not positive on the ID, but was possibly Officer Anderer, who's still holding me, said, quote, we're going to and he used the F word, expletive, with you and your friends a bit. I believe at this point they thought that I was part of the protests. Less than 5 minutes or so after I'd been pulled from the vehicle and handcuffed, I was in the back of another SWAT car, and they took me to the District 7 police station. My car was impounded, despite pleas from myself that I couldn't afford to get it out. Upon reaching the station, I remained handcuffed and was instructed to wait on a bench in a parking area. This bench was across from a desk or computer, and Officers Stoy and Anderer arrived and sat at this desk and continued to assert that I had stalked police and was conspiring to kill an officer. They questioned me about the belongings that had been taken from my vehicle, my camera, my recorder, and a walkie-talkie, and the nature of my website, MilwaukeeStories.org, asking if I had ever written anything supporting the killing of cops. To that, I said no. They asked me where I'd gotten my equipment. I answered that I bought the recorder online, most likely through Amazon. I'd been given the camera from a friend and had neglected to return the walkie-talkie after an event I'd volunteered at and used it. They asked if it was stolen or had been reported stolen and insinuated they'd like to charge me for theft. throughout the entire interaction, I remained polite, referring to the officers as sir. Both the camera and the walkie-talkie, as expected, came up clean, but the officers continued to argue with me about the details of our previous interaction. Officer Stoy said, quote, "You don't say what the expletive are you doing here?" And I politely responded that, sir, I had in fact not used any language in the course of asking this question. He at some point said that, you know, it wouldn't have been a problem if I had just moved along, to which, again, I tried to explain my car being in the wrong gear and said, quote, "If you'd just given me the opportunity," but Officer Ander cut me off quickly and proclaimed, quote, "We don't give opportunities, we end things." In the midst of all this, there was a moment of humanity and understanding when Officer Stoy mentioned that he was just glad he'd be able to go home that evening in light of two police killings in New York. And it was at this moment that I did acknowledge the potentially suspicious nature of my behavior while I was in the car and apologized to him, which he accepted. However, I also noted that in my experience, it hasn't been a crime to ask questions of law enforcement. After this exchange, the realization that my property had not been stolen, and my admission that I graduated from Northwestern University, tensions eased considerably, and I was told that I would be receiving two citations, one for resisting or obstructing an officer, and another for improper parking or standing of a vehicle. I cite both of the statutes that were cited against me in the piece that I wrote. The officers relaxed at that point, and we even took to a bit of small talk over the sophistication of my voice recorder. However, at this point, two men who remain unidentified, but who I assumed to be civilians in the employ of the department, came off the table where the officers were sitting. The officers relayed their version of the incident, and one of the men, who apparently didn't think me very smart, turned and said, quote, "You're lucky you didn't get shot," to which Officer Anderer also added, quote, "We don't mind making the news again."
All right. Well, that's a pretty loaded statement there, that we don't mind making the news again, and you're lucky you didn't get shot. We are going to have to leave it at there, I'm sorry to say. And it's a fascinating story. And so, Jabril Faraj, I think we're going to leave it with a recommendation that people pick it up and hear the end and read the end of the story for themselves. You can get it at Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. And if you Google that, and why I was arrested in Milwaukee Central City, people can pick it up. I did really just kind of want to hear the story in your own words, because it's remarkable, and I think it could have a chilling effect in reporting on these issues about police and protesters and police violence.
And I do want to just say one more thing. You know, I wrote this story because I wrote this account of my experience because it happened to me. But you know, I am not the main story here, and this is what I want people to realize, is that it's unfortunate that it had to happen to me, you know, a largely white-looking journalist, for something like this to get attention. But there are, in fact, or were, in fact, two black organizers who the police were looking for that they did not have concrete charges on. I believe that was why my question was not answered. And I just want to make sure that the story here is being reported.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. And feel free to reach out if there's any further developments on that. Thanks for joining us this morning.